There's so many examples in the world today of people who simply let life happen to them. They don't take a moment to say, what do I really want and how am I going to get there? It's often because we have so many limiting beliefs that convince us that we don't deserve to be successful on our own terms. We often get off track with our goals and deviate from the path that will lead us to success. We get so just glommed up in perfectionism, procrastination, analysis paralysis, and we all have the ability to transform that. We have the ability to live life on purpose, to create habits that sustain us and move us in a powerfully positive direction. We have the ability to choose to reframe fear and to think of our lives in a different way. My guest today is Tanya Dalton, and she and I talk about how important it is to dig deep into the worst of the things that have happened in life so that we can disrupt the patterns and identify the limiting beliefs that are no longer serving us and are preventing us from moving in a positive direction. Tanya's second book, On Purpose, The Busy Woman's Guide to an Extraordinary Life of Meaning and Success, is on sale now wherever books are sold. And this book will help you find a way to think bigger about your dreams and to stay on the path to achieve them. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Tanya Dalton is a best-selling author, speaker, and nationally recognized productivity expert. Tanya serves as a growth strategist for female leaders. Her highly anticipated second book, On Purpose, The Busy Woman's Guide to an Extraordinary Life of Meaning and Success, is on sale now wherever books are sold. In addition to her first book, The Joy of Missing Out, being named one of the top 10 business books of the year by Fortune magazine, Tanya's podcast, The Intentional Advantage, has received millions of downloads from listeners all around the world. She is also a featured expert on several networks, including NBC and Fox, and is a VIP contributor for Entrepreneur.com. Tanya has been featured in some of the world's leading publications, including Forbes, Inc., Fast Company, and Real Simple. She has been awarded the Elite Enterprising Women Award and has been named Female Entrepreneur to Watch for the state of North Carolina. Tanya is also the founder and CEO of Inkwell Press Productivity Company, a multi-million dollar company providing tools that work as a catalyst in helping women do less while achieving maximum success. Tanya Dalton, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
I am thrilled to be back. So excited for this conversation.
It is so rare that I get to re-interview a guest. And when your first book, The Joy of Missing Out, came out, you were a guest on the podcast. We did some lives together. It was extraordinary, the collaboration. And now you have this new book called On Purpose, The Busy Woman's Guide to an Extraordinary Life of Meaning and Success, that is coming out in just a few short weeks. So take us through it. What does it mean to live on purpose?
Yeah, I like that question because I feel like the word purpose can be really heavy, right? It can be one of those things where it's like, does this define me now and forever? And this can be really daunting and can make people feel a little bit nervous about even thinking about purpose. And really what I like to say is living on purpose is about living bigger than today. It's looking off in the horizon and seeing a brighter tomorrow and connecting our actions of today with that future we want, with that beautiful vision we have for ourselves and our lives in the future. It's not about changing who you are. It's rising up and becoming the best version of you. That's ultimately what living on purpose means.
I love that. And, you know, you've talked about and taught me so much about how to decide what your purpose is, because you're right to think that you have just this one life's purpose and this one thing that you're supposed to be doing. But one of the things that you kind of fight the myth is this idea of a multi-passionate person. So you believe that being multi-passionate is a myth. And so I'm imagining some of our listeners right now going like, no, I love art and knitting and this, and I love all this stuff. Tell us what does that mean? Why is being multi-passionate a myth?
Well, I think the excuse of I'm multi-passionate, that's the myth, right? Because the truth is we're all multi-passionate. Every single person on this planet loves more than one thing. I don't think that you could look far and wide in every corner of this planet and find somebody who's like, yep, one thing, just one, that's it. I mean, we all love lots of things, but we use that term multi-passionate as a procrastination technique, as something to hide away from really committing to anything. So we're using that as a way to not really step into our purpose, not really stepping into what our life was designed for. So it really is about accepting the fact that yes, you can be multi-passionate, but can we stop defining ourselves that way? Everybody is multi-passionate. Define yourself in a way that's really meaningful. Let's figure out what you are most passionate about and let's focus in on that. And when you focus in on that, it doesn't mean these other things just go away. I mean, I'm really passionate about productivity and growing my business. I'm also really passionate about building things with power tools. I'm also really passionate about home decor. I'm really passionate about my kids and lots of things. So it's okay to have many things that we love, but we have to choose to focus in on what we are most passionate about. So that way we give ourselves direction. Otherwise, we're scattering ourselves far and wide and we're wearing ourselves out.
We're wearing ourselves out and we're also losing the drive and the motivation. Because when you don't accomplish things, when you don't accomplish goals, you don't want to take on trying the next goal. And so, okay, this kind of ruffled my feathers, I'm not even going to lie, but when I was preparing for our interview today.
I can't wait.
I'm a pharmacist. I've been trained in change motivation, motivational interviewing. How do you inspire somebody to actually take great steps in their life? And so for my entire career, I have been teaching about SMART goals. And so when I saw your question that's like, hey, SMART goals don't work, I was like, who are you to tell me that they don't? So if people are listening to this and they're like, well, I need my simple, my, you know, manageable, my attainable, my realistic and time oriented goals, why do you think that they don't work and what's a better approach?
Yeah, well, here's the thing is I have taught SMART goals for years. So I totally feel you on that. I think that SMART goals really have their place. I love that they're super easy to remember. Like each letter stands for something. I just think SMART goals have been around since 1980. That's like 40 years. And it's just time for an update. It's time for a refresh. I was finding that as I was teaching goal setting to people and using the SMART method, I was constantly like saying, well, but here we want to make sure we're doing this. And over here we want to make, and so we were having to adjust it. So it's really about updating SMART goals. It's like an homage to SMART goals, like a hat tip, like, yes, you've had your place. You're amazing. And I think you gave us a good stepping stone, but let's step into what we need as modern women with the lives that we have. So instead of SMART goals, I'm calling it impact goals, goals with impact. And you'll notice there's some overlap with SMART goals. So we're not throwing them all away. So you're going to be okay. But it really is, it's about adjusting them. So IMPACT stands for inspirational, measurable, purpose-driven, adaptable, challenging, and timed. So I can go through each of those really quickly if we want.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, great. Well, so the first one is inspirational. So your goals need to inspire you and they need to be written in a positive form. We don't want to say, I want to quit smoking. It's I am a non-smoker. It's really choosing what you want. Like when you go through at a restaurant, you don't tell the waiter, let me tell you all the things I don't want. You tell the waiter, this is what I want. And you order it and it comes to you, right? Same thing. Let's put out into the world what it is we're wanting. Let's make sure too that this inspirational goal really fits what we want. We have to be in love with that messy middle part, right? Not just the end goal. So we want to write our goals so they are inspiring for us so that we get really fired up about them. So that's the I. Then we have M, measurable. So there's some overlap with SMART goals. We want our goals to be measurable. We have to be able to see our breadcrumbs behind us. We have to see how far we've come in order to see how far we can go in moving forward. And I think it's really powerful to have goals that you can measure. Now, the problem is a lot of times people hear measurable and they immediately are like, okay, I need to like check the numbers on the scale. I need to check my revenue numbers. They look for these numbers that are quantifiable, right? That add up. And really it's more about what is it you really want? Like if you're wanting to lose 10 pounds, maybe your goal really is measuring how often you're eating healthy, like how many times you're making a healthy dinner at home. So that's a way that we can measure without worrying about what those numbers are on the scale, because numbers don't define you. Number of followers, number on your paycheck, number on the scale, those do not define you. Let's not allow those things to define us. Let's choose how often we're wanting to do an activity or an act that we're choosing. So that's measurable. So we have inspirational, measurable, purpose-driven. I mean, the name of the book is On Purpose. If I didn't say it had to be purpose-driven, I don't know what I'd be talking about, right? So it's really tying in what our goals are. And this is something we can totally dive into in depth. But a lot of people don't know what goals to set, right? They're not setting goals that are for them. They're setting goals that everybody else is. They look around and they go, she's doing amazing over there. I should set those goals. Or I see this woman over here doing these things. Those need to be my goals. We want to tie our goals with that big vision of where we want to go in the future. And we can talk about how you can do that. We dive into that with the book, how you can figure out what goals are for you. So we want to make sure our goals are tied to our purpose. And then we have A, we have adaptable, which also goes together with C, challenging. Those go hand in hand. We want our goals to be challenging. We want them to push us out of our comfort zone. At the same time, we don't want them to be so challenging that they're impossible to attain. Because then we feel like, oh, I never accomplished my goals. We want them to be adaptable. We want to make sure that they happen the way that life happens, you know, kind of in a way that allows for that flexibility. Life demands flexibility. So we want to set goals that challenge us, but have that adaptability built in. So one of my favorite ways to do that is with MTO goals, minimum, target, and outrageous. So let's go back to the healthy eating example. So let's say you really want to eat healthy at home 4 days a week. That's a great goal, right? So that's what you're going to be measuring. So we could say that our target is 4 times a week, I'm going to eat a healthy meal at home. Well, our minimum could be, all right, 3 times a week. If I hit 3 times a week, I'm still winning. I'm still on the right track, right? That allows for some weeks that are maybe a little bit harder or a little bit tougher. Things are happening. Maybe you're traveling, all kinds of things like that. It builds in that flexibility. So our minimum is 3, our target is 4. So we're really shooting for 4. Our outrageous goal could be 6 days a week. And when we hit the outrageous goal, we celebrate, we're excited. That allows you to continue to challenge yourself. What we don't want to do is set goals that are so rigid that when we don't achieve them, when we don't get to that 4 day a week, what ends up happening is we go, oh, I'm the worst at goals. And then we just push it to the side and we just let it drop. right? By having a minimum, we're still allowing ourselves to attain some movement towards that goal. 3 days a week is amazing. That's still good. But we know that we're targeting for that four, right? Mm-hmm. So 1 week, maybe you do three, the next week, maybe you do five, and it all averages out. So we want to have some adaptability built in. And then the last letter is T, timed. We want to give our goals a container, because if we don't give ourselves a deadline, we'll never finish it up, right? Mm-hmm. So inspirational, measurable, purpose-driven, adaptable, challenging, and timed. So it's just a nice fresh update on those SMART goals.
Yeah, I like it, because if your goal doesn't inspire you, like, why even start? Yeah, why are we doing it? You know, you mentioned quitting smoking, and I've worked with a ton of people who want to quit smoking, and understanding why they want to do it is so, so important, because if you don't have a powerful reason why, it's just so easy to fall back into the patterns, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's going to be days that are amazing and you're just going to feel on top of the world. This is coasting along. This is incredible. And there are going to be days that are tough. Mm-hmm. And on those days that are tough, we have to remember, why in the world am I doing this? Why would I want to do this? And it's on those days we got to dig into that why. I really think it's important to post why you're doing a goal. You need to post it next to your mirror, next to your computer, so you can remember, because like I said, some days are tough. Some days are going to be amazing, but some days are tough. And digging into that inspiration of why you're doing it is really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually love doing the seven whys exercise, where you say, I want this thing in my life. I am a non-smoker. I am, you know, at my goal weight, whatever you're wanting to do. And then ask yourself, why is that important? And why is that important? And why is that important? And then when you start feeling like the tears welling up inside of you, then just ask yourself a few more times, like, yes, then you really get it.
It's true, because that first why is so shallow. It's just the surface level. It really is about getting deeper, because we want to go deep. That's really where we find a lot of satisfaction, when we go deep with what we're creating, what we're doing, what we're putting out into the world. That's when it becomes more meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's go back to something that you mentioned a moment ago, which is, how do you know what goals to set? Because this, I think, is a major problem for a lot of people. People feel stuck. They have limiting beliefs. There's all kinds of reasons that people don't set goals. And my guess is a lot of the times they're setting the wrong goals, and so they just don't ever accomplish them because they didn't want to really do it in the first place. So how do I know what to work on?
Yeah, I love this question, because we set a goal and we have a little bit of a fire in our belly. And then a couple of months later, sometimes a couple of weeks, sometimes a couple of days, that fire is just like a smoldering pile of ash. We don't really have that fire. And a lot of times it's because it's not really your goal. We're setting the goals that we think we should be setting, or the goals that we're supposed to be setting, or looking around, craning our necks over the fence to see, what's she doing over there? Okay, I'm going to do some of that because she's successful. So that's what I probably need to do. Instead of really leaning into, what is it I want? What is it that really fits me? What fits that vision of what I want in life? So that's where we start. We start by looking at what we want in the future. And I call this cathedral thinking. So cathedral thinking is based off this whole idea that in the 1100s, the 1200s, way back when they were building these amazing, beautiful cathedrals like the Duomo in Florence or Notre Dame, those city planners, those architects and builders, they started those cathedrals knowing they were not going to see them finished. They took hundreds of years to build, but that created a legacy. Those buildings are still amazing today. We can still see them, you know, hundreds of years later. So really looking far off into the future, that's your cathedral. So we want to look off into our future. Where is it I would like my life to be? What would I like life to look like for me? That becomes your cathedral. Or what your potential is 10 years down the road, maybe even 20, but let's just say 10 for now. Looking off, where do I want to be 10 years from now? That's my potential.
Now, in the book, I draw this as a map so you can really see it clearly. But what we do is we say, okay, I'm here right now. Here's my cathedral way off into the future. That's my potential. How do I make a map to get me from here to there, right? We just back it up. We go backwards from that cathedral. What's possible? If this is my potential in 10 years, what's possible in 5 years, maybe 3 years? What would be possible? And what would I like to have happen to get me on that path to that cathedral, right? So if that's what's possible, let's back it up even more. What's practical? What's something that I could do practically in the next 12, maybe 18 months? Okay, so we're getting a little bit closer. Well, if that's what's practical in 12 to 18 months, let's back it up. What should I prioritize in the next 3 months, the next 6 months, the next 9 months? Those things you want to prioritize, those are your goals. So you can see those goals are connected to that big, beautiful cathedral, that vision you have for yourself, for your life, for your family in the future. Therefore, they have a lot more meaning and they're automatically so much more inspiring because they are your goals. And when we accomplish them, we get that winning feeling, but it extends far past just crossing a finish line because we know it's connected to something so much bigger that we are desiring or looking for in our life.
I have a feeling that your words right there are actually kind of causing some people to feel some emotions, because I'm willing to bet that a lot of our listeners and a lot of the people that are going to pick up a copy of your book, they don't know what cathedral they want to build. They don't understand what they want to build. And so, you know, to me, it really sounds like you got to care about yourself to actually live life on purpose. And we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. When you first get started using crystals, it can be confusing to know if you're truly getting what you pay for. Are you paying a fair price? And how do you know that the crystals that you choose have not been procured at the expense of another human being's safety, dignity, welfare, or human rights? That's why when it comes to crystals, I shop at Wild Alabaster. The Begin collection is designed specifically for people who have never used crystals before. In this collection, you'll get a selenite, perfect for clearing the environment. You'll get a smoky quartz, which helps to cleanse and detoxify the environment, alongside a sage bundle, which you can use to clear out old energies. You'll then get a charging amethyst druzy, as well as a clear quartz. You can also stash a chunk of rose quartz somewhere around the house to bring you comfort and solace anytime that you feel a need for a little bit of self-love. Come and shop the Begin collection. Whether you are brand new to using crystals or whether you just want to recharge your collection of amethyst quartz, rose quartz, smoky quartz, and selenite, this is the perfect collection of hand-chosen stones that can help you to recharge your environment. Head to lindseyelmore.com/wildalabaster. That's lindseyelmore.com/wildalabaster, and grab a collection to get you started. And now, let's get back to the show. So how do you make it easy? You know what I'm saying? Because I think a lot of people are like, I really want to accomplish this goal, but I'm going to have discipline, and I'm going to have to be just so determined, and I'm going to have to, like, this whole concept that we have in our culture of everything has to be a struggle is not true. So, okay, talk to us more about, like, how do we approach it better? You know, once we've started seeing our cathedral And we understand that that cathedral can change because we have adaptability in our goals that we're working on. So how do you make it easy to get there?
Yeah. Well, okay. So first of all, willpower, discipline, they're totally overrated. You don't really want discipline or willpower. I like to equate it to white couches, like images of white couches. Like I love a living room with a white couch in it. And like I'll put them on Pinterest and I look at them and I'm like, ooh, this is what I want. And then I remember I have two kids, a dog, a cat, and we like to have popcorn and movie nights. Mm-hmm. That is not going to work for me. That is absolutely not going to work for me. And a really, really disciplined life is not a lot of fun. It's really disciplined, which sounds awful and boring. Is that really what you want? The thing is people who are disciplined or people who achieve their goals really do it through a series of small actions. Just repetitive, healthy habits they're doing for themselves on a regular basis, again and again and again. So again, let's go back to the healthy eating example. Let's say that you really want to be healthy and your cathedral is, I want to be healthy well into my 90s or something like that. Okay, so that's a big cathedral. So in thinking about that, what habits do we want to establish for ourselves on a daily basis? Well, maybe it is that you chop up vegetables after you come home from the grocery store and you place them in the refrigerator right next to your lunch. So that way you'll grab your healthy vegetables for your snack when you grab your lunch to go to work the next day or something like that. So something that's really manageable and easy. What we want to do is we want to create a series of wins for you where you're doing these habits on a regular basis and you're seeing, oh, I did that. Look at me. I can eat healthy. Oh, wow. I did it again. I can eat healthy. Wow. Look at that. I can eat healthy. And next thing you know, how do you describe yourself? Not as the worst with eating, right? You describe yourself as a healthy eater. So it's a matter of really establishing these healthy habits that are really small, really microscopic, tiny things. Laying out your clothes the night before for your workout, putting your journal next to your coffee pot so that you can start doing your journaling or whatever it is you're wanting to do. Create these little habits for yourself. That's really what true discipline is. It's creating these habits that happen automatically that are really nourishing and nurturing to you. And when we do that, it's so easy to win. That's so simple. I think we think that it has to be these giant steps or we have to run and take this big leap across this chasm of where we are now versus where we want to go. And a lot of times it's really one foot in front of the next. Sometimes it's looking around and going, hey, actually there's a bridge over there, or it's narrow over here, or maybe there's a canyon I can go down. I think we think that the opposite of stuck is unstuck. Like there's this magical moment where rainbows shoot out of the sky and suddenly we're unstuck. The opposite of stuck is action, taking action, and not even big action, small action, tiny action, itty bitty steps on a regular basis, laying out your workout clothes, chopping up the vegetables, putting the meditation app, you know, whatever it is, something small that gets you on that right path. And that's what starts to build that self-trust that you can do it. And that's really what we need. We don't need discipline. We don't need willpower. We just need to believe in ourselves and we create those breadcrumbs ourselves. I would love to chat for a second though, because I know that you mentioned that some of the listeners are probably like, I don't even know what my cathedral is. So I would love to kind of circle back around on that if you're okay with that, Lindsay.
Yeah, let's talk about it because it's so, I mean, if you can't see where you want to go, then you're never going to get there.
Then you totally feel stuck, right? Because you're like, well, everybody else knows where they're going and I don't know. Mm-hmm. So here's what I like to tell people. We have to look backwards in order to move forward. So a lot of times those things that you really desire in your life, they're hidden in your past. We just have to reflect back on them. We have to take a look back. So a couple of ways we can do this, and here's just a couple. We go through several in the book because I know this is a major stumbling block for a lot of people. I want to dream of the future, but I have no idea what it looks like, right? So what we can do is we can look back in our childhood before we were adulting. Because once we started adulting, we started shifting who we are. We changed the way that we did things. We wanted to fit in with everybody else. When we were kids, every possibility was available to us, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about what you wanted to be when you grew up. An astronaut. Maybe you wanted to be president. Maybe you wanted to be, you know, a professional athlete. All of those opportunities were there. Go back to that. Why did you want to be that athlete? Why did you want to be, you know, whatever it was you wanted to be? So for example, let's say you wanted to be something crazy like Wonder Woman, right? That's insane. I can't be Wonder Woman. okay, hold on a minute. Let's go in and let's ask why. Why did you want to be Wonder Woman? Was it because she had a way to find truth and justice where others couldn't? Because she inspired a whole generation of young girls? Because, you know, what was it that really appealed to you? And then ask yourself, okay, what activities did I love when I was a kid? What were the things that got me fired up, that I got really excited about? Not the piano lessons your mom dragged you to, but what were the things that you were like, ooh, I can't wait to go play softball. Okay, what was it about softball? Was it the activity? Was it being outdoors? Was it the team, you know, part of it? Was it the competition? What was it that was really appealing to you? And when we understand who we were before we started being adults, a lot of times we can find, oh, our passion is hidden in there. And we just start digging a little bit more. So we don't start with a blank sheet of paper. You have a whole history behind you to draw from. Mm. So never feel like you don't have anything, you know, heading out for your future. You really do. You have a whole backpack full of lessons learned and scrapes on your knees from making mistakes. We have trophies that we've won and accomplishments. We have all of those to pull from.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It reminds me of the research that we have, that if you poll kindergartners and ask, how many of you want to be the president of the United States? It's equal numbers, boys and girls. Yeah, equal numbers. And then by the age of 13, when children are now in eighth grade, almost no women say, I want to be president of the United States. And all the boys, all those same boys that in kindergarten were like, I would definitely want to be president of the United States. Most of them still hold those dreams. I think it's beautiful what you're saying, because before we started adulting, we actually had a lot more bravery and courage to be the people we wanted to be. And so I think one of the things that people struggle with is the perception of others and the way that other people perceive us. How do we stop caring, for lack of a better way to say it? You know, like, how do we get to that point where we go, this is my one life and I'm going to live it on purpose?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the big thing. This is my one life. And the truth is, if you live your life worried about disappointing others, the only person who will be disappointed is you. Mm-hmm. The only person who will be consistently disappointed is you, because the thing is so often too, we're projecting what other people expect of us, what other people want for us. And we often don't have those conversations to really uncover, what is it that you want from me, right? We don't have those difficult conversations. We don't bring that to light. A lot of times those things we're taking onto ourselves, even though they don't even exist, mm-hmm. right? We're projecting it from other people. And I think that's really important to first of all acknowledge that, you know, most people are not paying attention to what you're doing. Like, you perceive that everyone will be disappointed. Really? Everyone's going to be disappointed? Have you spoken to your significant other? Have you spoken to your family? Have you spoken to your friends? And here's the thing too, I think we have to keep in mind, especially when it comes to like friends and family, because it's really hard when we don't have that buy-in from our family members. Mm-hmm. We get really disappointed and it becomes really frustrating. And we wonder, well, why don't they want this for me? The truth is, your friends and your family, they love you. They want to keep you safe. And you know where you're safe? In your comfort zone. Because you're safe, you're wrapped in bubble wrap. So as far as they're concerned, you're doing great, even if you're not that happy being in that comfort zone. So a lot of times they hold us back, not because they don't love us. They hold us back because they do love us. They love us a little too much and they don't want us to step our necks out there, right? Like, what happens if you step out across the road? You could get hit by a car. Yeah, but I could also make it to the other side of the road, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes we just have to ground into who we are. Mm-hmm. And when we start to uncover why we want what we want, which is why it's so important that we are inspired by what we are doing, we can feel more grounded. We can feel more centered. We feel more rooted. And that makes us more able to stand confidently, stand tall, and stand bravely in what we want. There are going to be people whose feathers you ruffle. I just ruffled your feathers, Lindsay. There are people whose feathers you're going to ruffle, and that's okay. Because when we challenge the status quo, we give others the opportunity to see, oh, maybe I can challenge the status quo as well, right? And I think that's really powerful. Here's the thing, though. Here's one of the things that was said to me that really shifted my thinking with all of this. When you don't share your gifts, you have the ability to impact the world around you. The whole world can be impacted by you and your gifts. When we don't share that, when we play small and shove ourselves in these tiny little boxes, we are being selfish. We are not sharing our beautiful gifts with the world. We're not impacting people. We're not changing their lives. We're not showing them what we're capable of. And that's a shame, because they could be truly changed by what you create. So when I began to understand that not sharing my gifts was selfish, I began to realize, what am I thinking? I need to share this with more people. That gave me the confidence to step out. So sometimes it's really just reframing things, looking at them from a little bit of a different angle.
Another thing about like being a kid and seeing like the world as your oyster and all the things is, we haven't gone through like the trauma of what it takes to become an adult. And you encourage people to go back and explore the absolute worst things that have happened to them. Why? Why must you do this to us, Tanya? Why?
Well, if it makes it any easier, I explore some serious trauma in the book on myself, you know, because I want you to see, I'm not just asking you to do this. This is the work that makes a difference. It is when we peel back the bandages, when we allow these wounds to get air and oxygen, that's when they begin to heal. You know, having trauma, having failure, having frustrations, having shame and guilt in our past doesn't make any of us unique. We've all got it. It's just a matter of accepting that this is there, and now I can build on that. Because truly, the person you've become today, the person you are right now at this very moment, is because of the amazing things that you've done, but also because of the traumas, also because of the failures, also because of the lessons learned. And I think just trying to dismiss all of those things that we don't like about our past is doing a disservice to the beautiful human that you have become today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that there are certainly things, and I talk about several traumatic things in my life through in the book. I know that there are certainly things in my life that I do not feel gratitude for, but I can appreciate how they've made me who I am today, how they've shown me what I am capable of. And in fact, I truly believe that regret is so powerful to push against. Regret is so much stronger than the things that are shiny little trophies in our past, the things that we don't like, the things that we don't want to repeat. We can push against those so much stronger, because when you know what you don't want, it's easier to reveal what you do want. And I think that's the thing when we're like, ooh, I don't know what I want. What is it you don't want? Start with that list of, I don't want this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to repeat this. I want to do something different. You know, in my life, in my business, I had a season, I'll tell this story as quickly as I can, but you know, I had a season where I had all my product come in. I have a product-based business, Inkwell Press, Productivity Co. And I have a giant warehouse, and we had thousands of boxes delivered, thousands and thousands of boxes. I opened up the first box, everything in there's damaged. Second box, damaged. Third box, fourth box, 150th box, every single product was damaged. This is not long before our launch. I'm like, okay, we're dead in the water if we can't get this going, right? So I had to dig in and I had to say, okay, I'm going to be working longer days. We had 3 months where I worked 7 days a week, like 12 to 14 hour days. My kids would get off the school bus, go straight to the warehouse. The kids would spend the weekend at the warehouse. We would eat dinner at the warehouse. We would get fast food and eat it at the warehouse. I mean, like everything was happening at the warehouse. And I got to the end of the 3 months, which was hard. And I got to the end of the 3 months and we'd done it, right? Everything from the business side, that was successful. But I felt like the world's worst mom. I don't think I could have felt any lower as a mother. I literally was like, I am the worst. And I could have sat in that and I could have just said this, I'm the world's worst mom. And that's the end of the story. And that's it. This now defines me now and forever. But instead I thought to myself, I'm the world's worst mom. I never want to feel like the world's worst mom again. What do I need to do differently? And I made a decision. This is now several years ago. I made a decision in that moment that I was not going to work those hours ever again. I was going to leave work every day at 3 o'clock. I was going to work Monday through Thursday, and Fridays were off. I wasn't even working on Fridays. I run a 7-figure business. And now for years, I leave the work every day at 3 o'clock. And I wouldn't have thought that was possible. I wouldn't have even attempted it, quite honestly, if I hadn't had this season of true regret, of feeling like a horrible, terrible mom. But because I experienced that, I pushed against it and I saw what was absolutely possible. And I can tell you right now, years later, I'm so much happier for that. That regret I experienced built me into who I am today, where I have strong boundaries, where I am so happy, and I have a thriving personal life because of it. Mm. So regret is really strong. Let's remember that we can push against that.
You are echoing some of the lessons that I learned from Sheryl Sandberg about the lies that we tell ourselves that keep us from being able to move on. And so you were telling yourself a lie, which is, I am a terrible mom. I will always be a terrible mom. And because I'm a terrible mom, everything else is wrong with my life as well. And so Sheryl Sandberg says that these are the three P's that prevent us from being able to overcome trauma. So listeners, if you've got something going on in your life and you're telling yourself, this is terrible, it will always be terrible. And because it is terrible, everything else is terrible too. You have to put the brakes on that kind of thinking. And one of my yoga teachers really summed it up well. She's like, just say, now it's like this. Because no matter what you're going through, if you are feeling like you're in chronic pain or that your business is failing, whatever it is, it's like, okay, now it's like this, but it's not always going to be like that. So we're so rapidly running out of time, and that makes me very sad. What do you think the readers of your book, you know, give me like a before and after. What do you hope will transform inside of the people that read your new book?
Yeah, well, honestly, every chapter is a choice, right? Every single chapter, choose to disrupt your patterns, choose your identity, choose to invest in yourself, choose to create the time. I want women to see that we have choices. I think so often we don't see the choices there, and we feel like we have painted ourselves into the corner and we haven't looked up to realize there are no walls. We've never painted ourselves into a corner. There's always opportunities. There's always a chance to choose something. It may not be your first choice. It may not be the happiest choice, but there is an opportunity to choose. Mm. You know, as a woman business owner who's successful, I like to say I've been told no a million times. So every time I'm told no, I can look at that obstacle as this like wall in front of me. So I can choose right now to say, well, I was told no, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go put myself back in my house and I'm just going to, right? Or I can choose to go left. I can choose to go right. I can choose to go over it. I can choose to tunnel under it. Or I can choose to pour some gasoline on that wall and burn it to the ground. All of those are choices. Mm-hmm. And look at that. I had like what, 6-7 choices right there. So it really is about looking at things, taking a step back and seeing, this is an obstacle. How can I choose to see it as an opportunity? How can I see that this is an ideal chance for me to shift the way I'm running my life, running my business, running my relationships, running whatever it is? This is a beautiful chance for me to imperfectly step forward and try something different, to try it from a different angle.
It takes so much courage. You know, Ryan Holiday's brilliant book, The Obstacle is the Way, it takes a lot to really dig deep inside of yourself and go, this that I'm butted up against is actually there for me to find my creativity, to this and that. I feel like a lot of women don't feel like they have the ability to choose. And I mean that in big situations, like can't leave their super toxic spouse, can't physically manage everything that it is to take care and raise children, which, ladies, I don't know if anybody has told you today, but we are not designed to single-handedly raise children at all. It takes a community of people. So how can people, I want to end because you've got this idea of habit stacking, which I think is what you mentioned a little bit earlier about like getting the small wins. But I also think that it gets small wins on making these choices that empower you to really grow to the point where you're like, no, I do have a choice not to talk to this toxic friend. I do have this choice. So talk to us about like habit stacking and almost like choice stacking as well.
Mm-hmm. It is. Once you start to recognize that you have choices out there, and I think this is what's amazing, is it's a domino effect. We make one small choice. So you start with something really small, something that's, you know, incremental, something that doesn't matter, but you see that you have a choice there. And what happens is our brain then starts going, oh, she likes choices. Let me start scanning for more choices. This is our reticular activating system really kicking in, right? Where it's like, oh, once you start making one choice, the doors start opening up in front of you, things that you didn't even realize were there, but it starts small. It starts with making tiny little choices. You know, we talked a little bit and we touched on that whole idea of the habit stacking of really making it like, if you want to meditate, what's a choice you can make to make meditation easier? Leaving your meditation app right next to your coffee pot. Coffee pot is a habit you've already got, right? Already going to get your coffee in the morning. So stack that other habit right on top of it. Okay, here's my meditation app. And then you can put where you go meditate, you can leave your journal. So then you can journal right after or whatever it is you're wanting to do. Mm-hmm. There we are building in that discipline, right? And we are choosing how we're spending our time when we do that. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely a choice. And I truly believe that when we understand that those choices are there, they do start to open up. I think what keeps us back a lot of times is the fear. The fear holds us back. And so we have a whole chapter on fear because I know that's a big stumbling block. But really, those fears that we have are these giant monsters that feel overwhelming. If we really get to the heart of them, if we let the worst case scenarios run wild through our heads, really, like literally saying, okay, what's the worst that can happen? I'm going to give myself 15 minutes to think about what's the worst. You're already doing it late at night while you're laying in your bed in the dark, right? You're already letting those things happen. So let's choose that. I'm going to choose to think about what's the worst case scenario. So you spend 15 minutes coming up with the worst case scenario. Then you're like, okay, is that really the worst case scenario? Like, what's the worst that could happen there? Or could I minimize that? So for example, if you want to start and you want to go off and do your business, worst case scenario, business fails and you end up homeless, right? Living in your car. That's the worst case scenario you can come up with. Oh my gosh, what would that look like? What would I do with my kids? The kids will be hungry. We're going to be on the streets. Okay, is that really going to happen? Or do you have friends you could go crash with for a little bit? Could you move into the extra bedroom at your parents' house that your mom converted into an art studio 10 minutes after you moved out? Not ideal. Not something that you're like, yes, I want to live with my parents, but also not worst case scenario. Not that bad. Survivable. Right. So it is taking these big things and choosing to make them smaller.
Yes. And it's also like, okay, so you tried the entrepreneurial thing. How about you not let your ego push you to the point where you have lost your house, lost your financial footing, and you just go, I'm gonna get a job. You know, that has always given me so much courage and freedom in my entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship is not fun necessarily. You have no clue what you're doing when you first get started. You learn some very expensive lessons along the way, But I've always sat back and gone, what's my absolute worst case scenario? Oh no, I go back to my $100,000+ a year job that I trained and studied and got a doctorate to be able to do.
Ugh. So terrible, right? Ugh, oh gosh, what would I do?
Yes.
You're going to live. Yeah.
You'll live. You will absolutely live. And I encourage people to think about the best case scenarios as well. Like, what if I just put on my running sneakers and I say I'm going to walk to the front door? Okay. What if you end up walking a mile? What if something bigger happens? Okay. Last question, I promise. You say that fear is rooted in three stories. So many people get paralyzed by fear. Talk to us about fear and how we can overcome it.
I think this for me was a huge light bulb when I was writing the book, is really understanding, recognizing it comes from one of three seeds of self-doubt. I am unlovable, I am worthless, or I am helpless. All of us have one of those as our core story. And all of our fears stem from that one belief. So for me, it's I am unlovable. So I worry about disappointing other people. I worry about those kinds of things. And I have this fear of what are people going to think, right?
Right.
But if I understand that it comes from this story of I am unlovable, I can pull that seed up by its roots and I can reframe it and choose how I see myself. So when I'm stepping in and I see fear is there, I know it's coming from I'm unlovable. So how can I make myself more loved? I don't have to get love externally from other people. I can find that love from within me. Mm-hmm. How can I more positively self-talk? How can I dress in a way that makes me feel more confident and more loved internally? There's lots of ways that we can use that. But when you understand, and I go into each one of those three seeds in the book, so it's easier for you to figure out which one is yours. When we understand what our stories are, when we get to the heart of who we are and the way that we think, we can choose to change the way we think. Mm-hmm. We absolutely have that power.
Oh, I love it so much. Listeners, I hope that each and every one of you will go and pick up a copy of On Purpose, The Busy Woman's Guide to an extraordinary Life of Meaning and Success. It is on sale now. I know I said that it was on sale in a few weeks, but by the time you listen to this episode, it will be on store shelves, and you can check out more about Tanya and all of the work that she does at www.tanyadalton.com. Thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your wisdom on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Yeah, we always have a good time. I was so excited to have this conversation with you today. I knew we'd have a great time.
Absolutely. It's always good to be around women that build other women as a way of life. So grateful to get to talk to you again. Everybody, go back and listen to our first episode about Tanya's first book, The Joy of Missing Out. Most skincare that is out there on the market is packed with lab-made ingredients that do damage to the internal structures of the skin and don't address the main reasons that skin looks old. What we need is skincare that actually addresses the five pillars that help our skin to look healthy, bounce back, and have a vibrant complexion. We need our skin to stay hydrated, have good blood flow, good collagen, good elastin, and to maintain our facial muscle tone. Primal Life Organics has a glow package that is specifically designed to address all five of these pillars. The products are super easy to use, and there are certain products to use in the morning and in the evening. Get up in the morning and wash your face with luxurious saponified oils in the Earth Facial Cleanser. Then apply the coffee bean serum to give your skin a quick jolt of caffeine, making it look alive and vibrant. In the evening, wash your face again with the Earth Cleanser. Then exfoliate all of the day away using the Sweet Revenge Exfoliator, and then give your skin a big dose of antioxidants to absorb throughout the night with the Blueberry Elixir. This way, we will maintain our skin's inner structures now and into the future, and ensure that as our skin goes through the natural journey of aging, that we preserve, maintain, and build hydration, circulation, muscle tone, collagen, and elastin. Head to lindsayelmore.com/primallife to shop the Glow Package today. That's lindsayelmore.com/primallife to try out my new favorite skincare. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.